Thank you, Larry, for reading our passage for us this morning. We're going to use Psalm 84, the entire psalm, as our time together, the text for our time together this morning. I just had Larry read that last part for us as we set the stage for our time in our study together. I'm looking across the assembly just now, and I see we have quite a number of visitors who are with us. We're so very appreciative of that, and hope and pray that you could make this a regular stop on your week and come here to be with us as we worship and have our Bible class together. Next Lord's Day, we are having an end-of-the-month fellowship, so please, if you're visiting with us, feel free to come and be a part of that. We would very much appreciate that. It'd give us an opportunity to get to know you a little bit and for you to know us a little bit better. And so we would appreciate your consideration of that as we come together next week. In the portion of the psalm that Larry read for us, this 84th psalm, the psalmist presents a personal look into his own heart, his own desires, and expresses to us in verse 10 particularly of the reading that Larry gave, how that one day, he will say, one day with the Lord, one day in the courts of the Lord, is better than 1,000 days doing anything else. This is a psalm that has a lot to tell us about where our own heart should be as we come together to worship God. It has a lot to show us about reverence, about how we ought to hold God in reverence and be in awe of the God that we serve and respect for Him. Has a lot to tell us about the eagerness you and I should feel when those opportunities to be with the people of God come around as we meet from time to time during the course of the week. A religious author who lived in the late 1800s called Psalm 84 the sweetest psalm among all of the psalms. In fact, he actually gave it a little bit of a nickname. He called Psalm 84 the Pearl of the Psalms. The Pearl of the Psalms. Now, it's not a triumph psalm. He's not rejoicing and expressing his deep personal feelings because there's some personal triumph in his life. In fact, rather, what this psalm is actually a cry of desperation. It is a psalm that the psalmist is writing about how he yearns, he desperately yearns to be with God, yearns to be with the people of God, worshiping God in the courts of the Lord, or in the temple, or perhaps maybe even it's a reference back to the tabernacle that existed before the temple. But either way, the emphasis is not on whether it be the tabernacle or the temple, but the emphasis is on his own personal desires. That I would rather spend one day worshiping God than I would 1,000 days doing anything else. And so he will express that longing in verse number 2 of Psalm 84. In fact, he makes this statement, "My soul longeth, yea, even fainteth for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh crieth out for the living God." Now this psalm that we're looking at this morning is one of 12 psalms that we have in the Old Testament collection of psalms that was written by the sons of Korah. We have 12 of those. And it is identified here in verse number 1 that is written by the sons of Korah. Now, you may recall that the sons of Korah were those who led a revolt against Moses. The people Moses had selfishly given himself to time and time again. Well, they turned against Moses. They didn't like Moses' leadership and various aspects of that. So they rebelled. And in that rebellion, Korah died. And Korah died not only himself, but all of his co-conspirators along with him. And you can read about that in Numbers 26 and verse number 11. And since Korah's family members, who did not die in the rebellion, were a part of the Levitical order, well, they had a place of service and function in the tabernacle or the temple later on. And that place of service in the tabernacle was being a porter, maybe your Bible says, or a doorkeeper. In fact, there's a reference of that in Psalm 84 and verse 10. Where here the reference is that I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than to dwell in the tents of the wicked. He's referring to a doorkeeper because if you were to check back into those Old Testament passages, you would find that that's what their line of service was. These sons of Korah served as doorkeepers. They served in that capacity. Now, we don't know which son of Korah wrote Psalm 84. There's no specific identification. In fact, it's plural if you look carefully at this psalm, the sons of Korah. And so maybe it's an indication that there was more than just one of them that was working on writing this together. But either way, what the psalm is doing is pressing to the point that serving God, worshiping God, being with God and the people of God in the service of God is worth more than anything else that a person could devote their time to. And the whole psalm is really a beautiful, majestic look at how the psalmist himself feels on the inside about the privilege to be able to worship God and the respect that he brings to that and the reverence that he has for that as God's people come assembling together. So this morning what I'd like to do is I want to use Psalm 84 as a guide for you and I today. As we look at the expressions of the hearts of whomever it may be who have written this psalm, as we look at that, may you and I learn as well to understand deeply the privilege of being able to worship God. And may we have a deep reverence for God, not only in our times in which we come to serve and come to worship as we do in the Lord's Day Assembly, not only in times like that, but a deeper reverence for God in just our general consideration and how we live as people. The world in which we live is a world that, as I'm sure you are aware, is quickly trying to erode reverence for God. And even maybe as you look upon various religious groups or assemblies from time to time, and you can see sort of a lessening of the aspect of reverence, a more casual approach towards reverence. And you and I, if we're not careful, that thing, that very idea can bleed over into the Lord's people, and we can take a more casual approach to worship. Well, this psalm will show us a man who had no use for that sort of thing. And so as we move through this psalm this morning, let's be individually asking ourselves, do I look at worship the way the psalmist looked at worship? Do I have a reverence for God like the psalmist had a reverence for God? Do we yearn for it? Do we hunger for it? Do we have a reverence for God that really nothing else in this entire world compares to our attitude and our heart and our mind about God and about what God has done for us? And then as well, what we will see in this psalm is the results of a life like that. What is the result of a life that builds itself around this deep reverence and respect for God and yearning for opportunities to serve God? Well, the psalmist will have something to tell us about that as well. In Psalm 84, in verse number 5, he will write, "Blessed is the man whose strength is in thee, whose heart are on the ways of them." Now, we'll examine that verse in some detail as we work our time through. But for just now, notice, please, "Blessed is the man whose strength is in thee." What this deep reverential attitude towards God will do, where we hold God up as more important than anything else that this world could ever offer, and the opportunity to serve God and worship God more important than anything else, what it will do for us is it will bring into us a strength like nothing else can do. Because God occupies the focus of the psalmist, even though there are hard times in his life, he will comment about passing through the valley of Baca within this psalm. It's a reference to the valley of tears. So there's some kind of trouble, some kind of conflict or difficulty. They, even though that is true, they go from strength to strength, as it is mentioned in verse number 7. And so the result of having this God-centered attitude and bringing that into worship, so that nothing is more important than God. Nothing deserves reverence in your heart more than God. What the result of that is you get stronger and stronger as the days go by, because that focus will help you to weather any storm that comes along. And so this morning we will spend our time looking at what the psalmist has to tell us about one day in thy courts. And as we reflect on this psalm, just please keep in your mind that it's a personal reflection of how he feels about God, how he feels about worshiping God, how he feels about the opportunity to be with the people of God and in the grand privilege of being able to worship. And may that inspire us, this look in this psalm, to be those who likewise have the same ideals. The psalmist is going to move us through three areas this morning. First of all, he's going to talk about, in the first four verses, the fact that my delight is in the Lord. Remember, he's telling us about his heart. He's telling us about his mind. He's telling us about what is central and most important to him. And so he begins in these first four verses, by making the statements and bringing us to consider his own personal delight is in the Lord. And it's probably verse 2 of this that shows us this marvelous aspect of his own heart and how his delight is there. I want you to notice that in Psalm 84 in verse 2, three times within this one verse, the psalmist will point out how he had a deep yearning and desire for God and the courts of God. Now on your outline, or on your screen rather, I've intentionally highlighted the word longeth, and fainteth, and crieth. These are the words that within this passage are those words that bear to our minds and show to our minds the heart of this psalmist. He longs for, he faints for one day in the courts, and his heart cries out for the living God. He expresses his deep desire in all of these words. In fact, in this same verse, Psalm 84 and verse 2, he will talk about the fact that his soul longeth after thee. The word soul, as it is used here, is the Hebrew term for the innermost being of a person. And so the idea is that deep down, in the inner part of him, in the heart of hearts of him, in the very most important and intimate place in his life, that part of him that is the very inner core of him, he desires to be able to spend time with God. And that's what his whole heart and mind are set on. And then if you'll notice carefully, he will intensify this even more. Look down just a few words later, and he will make this statement. Once again, Psalm 84 in verse 2, "My heart and my flesh crieth out after the living God." My heart, that is my inward part, my heart. And then my flesh, that's his outward part, isn't it? And so my inward part, my outward part, really what we would say is everything about me cries out for the living God. My inside, my outside, everything that I am cries out for the living God. If David were the one who wrote this psalm, we could really recognize his sentiments, because he expressed that himself in a psalm that he did write. Psalm 122 in verse 1, in which there David the psalmist will say, "I was glad when they said unto me, let us go into the house of the Lord." David expresses himself in the same way as these sons of Korah, and explains his innermost feelings. "I was glad when that opportunity came around." And look at the wonderful illustration that the psalmist gives in Psalm 84 in verse 3. All of it designed and built around showing us what he really craves and desires. In Psalm 84 in verse 3, he will say, "Yea, the sparrow hath found an house, and the swallow a nest for herself, where she may lay her young, even thine altars, O Lord of hosts, my King and my God." What a wonderful illustration. The psalmist is expressing almost a jealousy, really, that the birds and the fowls, they have a place in the temple of God, around the altars of God, and they never have to leave. They've built their nest there. They've built their homes there. And it's almost a jealous expression how he longs that he could be there at all times and never have to leave. And oh, that he could be like the birds who are just permanent residents there. And that brings him to this portion in verse number 4 in which he will say, "Blessed. Blessed are they that dwell in thy house. They will be still praising thee." Blessed are those individuals. In fact, 3 times, if you'll notice carefully in this short psalm, 3 times he will use the idea of blessed. The blessed person is the person whose deep down desire is to hold God in great honor and in the high position that he deserves, to have respect for God. Notice the verses with me. Here in verse number 4, Psalm 84 and verse 4, he will start out with the idea of blessed are they that dwell in his house. Here is the next verse, verse number 5. Blessed is the man whose strength is in thee. And then he will conclude this psalm with the same idea. Blessed is the man that trusts in thee. And so over and over again, in the psalmist's mind, the blessed person, the blessed life, is this person who has this deep down reverence for God. They understand who God is. And they yearn for, they look forward to, they desire more than anything else the opportunity and privilege to be able to be with God and worshiping God. And so the message from the psalmist is clear. The blessed life is the life that yearns for God in this fashion, whose praise is in God, who find their strength and trust in God. That's the blessed person. The blessed person lives just like that. And his resolve of mind is that there is nothing in this life that is more important than God. Nothing in this life that is of grander privilege extended to man than the privilege to be able to worship God and be with God in the services of God. You see, what is important in your life, in mine, is not anything the world would paint for us as the next thing you need to have. The grandest thing is not the finest house on the block. The grandest thing is not that new car, that new dress, the finest, latest cell phone. Oh, our world tries to convince us of things like that, that material things are the things that you really need in your life. And then if you have just this next thing, whatever it may happen to be, your life will find fulfillment. And that's just totally untrue. That's just a lie of the devil. Life is not about having things. What the grandest thing, the blessed thing is that you have God even if you have nothing. That's the grandest thing, that God is in that central portion of your life. And so as we look at these opening 4 verses, then he sets the stage for us in these words. You and I are brought to the point of asking ourselves, do I have an attitude of deep reverence for God just like this psalmist did? That God is my everything, that he occupies the center place in my life, and that worshiping God is a grand privilege that I look forward to. I think Jesus forever settles the question when he, in one brilliant sentence in Matthew 6 and verse 33, made this statement when he said, "But seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." Let me ask you, do we need things in this life? Well, yes, we have to have things. We have to have a way to get around. We have to have a dwelling place. We need things in this life. But things are second to seeking the kingdom first. Things are second to the righteousness of God. And the psalmist has seemed to capture that within his own self and realizes and expresses his deep reverence for God. And so he starts out with this thought that he's expressing within his own heart. His delight is in the Lord. My delight is in the Lord. And he moves from his delight in the Lord to my strength is in the Lord. My delight is in the Lord. He desires it so much that he wishes he could be like a bird that has made its nest in the temple and lives there all the time. He yearns for it that intensely. That's my delight. But now he's going to tell us something about his strength. He switches from his longing to be with God to what it does for him in his inner self. And that is, it gives him strength. Verses 5 to 8 help us see how important that is in his life. Verse number 5 carries this statement: "Blessed is the man whose strength is in thee, and whose heart are the ways of them." Now, if you're reading from a King James translation, that may seem to be just a little bit of a challenging statement, whose heart are the ways of them. But this phrase is made easier as we maybe look at it in some other translations. For example, here it is in a different translation: "Blessed is the man whose strength is in thee, whose heart is set on Zion." Here's still another translation in which it says, "whose heart is set on pilgrimage." And then this one as well, Psalm 84 and verse 5: "Blessed is the man whose strength is in thee. They long to travel the roads that lead to your temple. Expositors are pretty well agreed that this psalm is what is called a pilgrimage psalm. In other words, it is a song. The psalms are a collection of songs. It is a song that they would sing as they're traveling down to the place of worship. Do you ever sing in your car sometimes a praise song of some fashion? Well, it's sort of like that, only without the car. Maybe they're walking or traveling on animals of some kind. But they're singing as they're going along. And a song that they would sing, this one, as they are traveling to Jerusalem, and in this case, the house of God. And the psalmist is in with that, looking forward to the time when they are traveling to the house of God. And so it would imply to us that he's not there right now. He's not in the house of God right now. He wants to be, he yearns to be, but he's looking forward to that opportunity. And did you catch the phrase in this statement in verse 5 once again? "Whose heart is set on Zion." It's set on Zion. That's an important consideration. They were set on worshiping God. Don't miss that point. That's what was the focus of his life. And think about that just a minute. His heart is set on that. Someone said one time that our public worship is only the manifestation of our personal and private devotion. I like that statement. Our worship is only the manifestation of our personal and private devotion. In other words, it's how we express that. We express our private devotion in our public worship. And that is so true. God never meant, you see, for our public time together in worship or Bible classes or other maybe assemblies. He never meant for that to be just a checkoff. Okay, I did that. I've accomplished that. I'm done with that for the week. Rather, worship is built upon a life of devotion for God. So that throughout the week we're demonstrating a devotion to God as we live our daily lives in the places that we go. What we do on Sunday ought to be the high watermark of our week. And it will be if that's what our heart is set on. And to have a heart set on that during the course of the week, we have to practice the religion that we express, that is, that we live by. We stay active in the Lord's work week by week. In fact, look at what the psalmist says this does for him. He says, "They go from strength to strength. Every one of them in Zion appeareth before God." And I want to tell you that what the sons of Korah have to say to us is so counterculture. Our world constantly streams into your life and mine through television media, through print media, social media, telling us basically the idea, well, have it your way. You want to have a good life? Have it your way. Maybe you've seen posted across social media somewhere, hashtag, excuse me, hashtag the good life. And the good life to them is some destination place they're at or something they're involved in. But you see, that's not really the good life necessarily. Our world teaches the idea of follow your passions wherever they lead you. And maybe you've heard someone make the statement, you do you. You do what pleases you. We hear that a lot. Once again, Psalm 84 has no patience for that kind of thing. True strength, you see, is not found in things. It is found in seeking God, not seeking self. And the blessed life, the blessed heart, it's not a cul-de-sac that circles round and round with me in the center. And as long as I get everything that I want in my life, then I feel like I'm blessed. That's not what it's about at all. In fact, as this psalmist reflects, what the blessed life is all about is building your life around God, serving God, and building that into not just one day a week, but every day of your life. And you find your strength is in God. And if we do that, we'll be just like this psalmist who in verse 10 will make the comment that we've been talking about, and that is, one day with the Lord is more than 1,000. This verse is really the climax of this particular psalm, and it is one of my favorite verses in all of the Bible. And the way maybe we would express it is that one day worshiping God with the saints of God in the fellowship of those saints and in the fellowship of God in the assembly of God, it's worth more than anything else that we could ever think about and give ourselves to. It's worth more than anything else because God is that central figure in our lives, and we live it out daily, and we express that most prominently when we come together. And the result of that is, as the psalmist has said, you go from strength to strength. Doesn't mean there won't be hard times or difficulties. It doesn't mean that at all. But it does mean that you have what you need to go through those particular difficulties in your life. Now that brings us to one last consideration. The psalmist will first start us out by talking about my delight is in the Lord. And then he'll talk about his strength is in the Lord. And he'll finish up this psalm with telling us about now his trust is in the Lord. His trust. Now trust is a big subject, isn't it? Trust is what you lend yourself to. It's what you rely on. It's what is something in your life that you consider that thing that is important enough to you that you can build around it. And look at what the psalmist will say about this in Psalm 84 and verse 11. For the Lord God is a sun and a shield. The Lord will give grace and glory. No good thing will he withhold from them that walk uprightly. Notice this passage. This reflects the attitude of a man who learned how important it is for his lifestyle to reflect his life choice. If his life choice is God, then his lifestyle must reflect that choice. And the same is true for you and I. If our life choice is God, then our lifestyle must reflect that God is the first and most important piece in our life. And we must, as the psalmist says, then walk uprightly. We trust God enough that as we live day by day, we mold our lives and build our lives around what he tells us to do. Now, I want to say before we get too far into that particular part, that the psalmist is not giving us a spiritual axiom. He's not saying that your life will have no problems. If you serve God and walk uprightly, your life will never see any hardships or difficulties. He's not saying that. In fact, in verse 6, he just moved us through the aspect of passing through the Valley of Baca. And the Valley of Baca, as we mentioned, is the place of grief or anguish or tears. And he's saying, even though you do that, even though you're traveling through the Valley of Baca, you'll move from strength to strength. And oh, by the way, let me hasten to say that when you're in the Valley of Baca, the place of anguish and grief and tears, that's not the time to sit down. He will say, walking through the Valley of Baca. When you're in that hard place in your life, just keep trusting in God. Just keep walking the way that God directs within His Word. Don't sit down. Just keep trusting God. Keep moving forward in your life with God. And so you see, he's telling us that choose God and following God in your life is going to be the most blessed life. It's not going to be life necessarily on easy street. If I read my Bible right, it didn't turn out that way for Jesus, did it? Didn't turn out that way for Paul. Didn't turn out that way for any of those in Hebrews 11. No, it's an expression that even though there are and will be hardships, they're going to be minimal compared to the blessing and privilege of serving God and living like we mean it. It builds within us a trust in God that nothing can take away. Through thick and thin, our determination should always be, I will serve God, I will seek the kingdom first in His righteousness, and I will do my best to demonstrate that in how I live, whether it be good times or whether it be hard times. What does serving God then mean to you? What does worshiping God then mean to you? Well, it meant to the psalmist that it's worth more than 1,000 days doing anything else. I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than to dwell in the tents of wickedness. He's telling us about his own choice, isn't he? I would rather this than this. I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of God than to dwell in the tents of wickedness. He's made a choice. He set his heart on this. He's put his trust in this. And I want you to notice as well that what the psalmist has done for us is he's made a great parallel here, or really a contrast, I should say, two ends of the same spectrum. One side is being a doorkeeper in the temple, which was considered basically what we might call a door greeter today. Maybe today on your way in you were met by a door greeter, someone there standing to welcome you in. He'd say, I would rather do that. I would rather do that than to live in the tents of wickedness, to live with wicked people. And he's made that choice. And the psalmist is expressing that choice to us. And that choice is what brings to him that point at which he'll trust God through anything, whether it be good times or whether it be bad things. And so what about you? And as I look at my life, what about me? Do we reflect the same thing in our own life? What would you pick if you could pick? What would you choose if you could choose? Being at a position in the house of God that maybe wasn't a lot of fanfare and prestige, or living among the tents of the wicked, living your life like the world lives, what would be your choice? But you know what? The reality is you do get a choice, don't you? You get a choice. You get a choice to put God first, worshiping God first, having a deep reverence for God in not just what you do on the Lord's Day morning, but on every day of the week, and you're following that life choice up with your lifestyle. You get that choice. You get that choice to make for your own self. And in fact, the reality is, no one can choose for you how to build your life. Well, I pray that the sons of Korah have shown us today that it is far better to choose the Lord over anything else of this world, even when there's hardships and difficulties and problems in your life. And then you follow that choice up with the way that you live. Put God above all else. Make God your delight. Find your strength in God. Put your trust in God in every situation of your life. And what it will yield to you in your life is that you will grow and move from strength to strength. And the hardships and the problems and the difficulties will not be a permanent detriment in your life. And it will develop only deeper respect for God, greater awe for God, greater appreciation for God. Live your life as the psalmist. A man by the name of Asaph in Psalm 73 and verse number 25 made this statement, Whom have I in heaven but you? And there is nothing on earth that I desire other than you. He also is expressing the fulfillment, the desire of his own life, how he feels on the innermost part of himself. And I pray as we consider this psalm this morning that you and I would have that reflection as well in our own life. That there is nothing that I desire other than you. Nothing in this world that is more important than God. If that's where you're at in your life and you have not yet obeyed the gospel, then you are ready to make that decision. You just need to understand that what the Bible teaches is that your desire for God is to be followed up with obeying God. Specifically, that you have to believe His Son is the Christ, John 8 and verse number 24. Your desire for God to be the most important means you're going to put Jesus the first place in your life. And you're going to be willing to confess that belief, as the Bible teaches in Romans 10, verse 9 and 10. Repenting of your sins, that's an important consideration as well. You're turning your life around and doing a 180, and then you're baptized for the remission of those sins. And this morning, if we can help you with that, if you're ready to make that decision, then we're here to help you in any way that we can. If maybe you just need to change some things about your life, you've not really had God in that first place, and He's not been particularly your delight and your strength and your trust, and you're ready to change that, then we'll help you with that as well by praying together. So if you need to make a decision, why don't you come right now as we stand and we sing this song together.